This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
Our guests today on Keeping the Faith are Howard White and Rob Kirby from the Wesley Foundation here on at the U of I campus. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
And we're talking about campus ministry. Now, why are each of you interested in campus ministry? Howard, let's start with you.
Rob and I came into campus ministry in slightly different ways, though we're working in the same place. My role is that of the director of the Wesley Foundation here and also senior pastor of Wesley United Methodist Church.
So yours is a congregational-based campus ministry.
Well, it has two components to it, but they're separately incorporated units.
Okay.
They just happen to share me and a few other staff. I was appointed to that ministry by our bishop and district superintendents who saw that as a good fit for my gifts and skills. And of course, it's a great place to be. Who wouldn't want to be around a campus like the U of I?
Had you been involved in campus ministry yourself when you were a student?
As a college student at Texas Christian University, as an undergraduate, I was president of our Wesley Foundation and very involved in the campus-wide campus ecumenical group. And then for a brief period of time, I served as a pastor in London, England. And while I was there, my job responsibilities included serving as the free church chaplain to two colleges in London.
And Rob Kirby, you're the associate pastor by title at Wesley Foundation, but your job description sort of focuses on campus ministry. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Whereas Howard kind of shares some of his responsibilities between the church and the foundation, all of mine fall directly under the foundation. So I work most directly with programming and ministries for and with the college students there. I am also under appointment, so part of the reason I'm there is the bishop said, go, and I went. As Methodist ministers, we live with that reality.
Sure.
But it was a pleasant reality for me. I had made it fairly widely known that I was very interested in campus ministry and felt like I had some of the gifts and graces to help in that area.
Now, you've been doing this how long?
Howard and I have both been in it for 2 years.
2 years.
Before that, I was doing youth ministry for 5 years. So,
where was that?
That was in Moline, Illinois, okay. Up in the Quad Cities.
And where were you before that?
Before that, I was out at Boston University doing my Master's of Divinity there.
Okay. And why did you want to go into campus ministry? You said you made it widely known you'd love an appointment in that direction.
Couple things. A big piece of it was just the formative process that my campus ministry had in my life when I was at the University of Evansville, which is a United Methodist university. So we had a United Methodist chaplain there, and he did an excellent job, Dr. John Britton. Mm-hmm. He did an excellent job of finding ways to let students explore their own faith in an environment where you could share freely, where you could not feel like you were being pressured to have to believe any particular thing. But I came out pretty squarely as a United Methodist out of that process.
Now, when you two ended up working together, did you have a choice about that? Or was that a surprise to both of you that you ended up at Wesley working on this University of Illinois campus?
Oh, we're pleased to be working together. We didn't know each other really beforehand. We had the chance to meet each other before we actually came to campus. But the church that Rob was working as a youth pastor at was my home church, and my mother's on staff at that church. So we had that much in common.
You're almost related.
Almost. I had known what Rob was doing there and the creative ministries that they were engaged in with the youth there, and so and have heard positive things about his vision for years. So I was glad to be on a team with him.
Having said that, I think it was purely coincidental that we ended up at the same place. I suspect that as they were looking at appointments and finding places to put us, they thought our personalities might mesh well. Mm-hmm. But to best of my knowledge, neither of us requested each other, and neither of us screamed bloody horror at finding out we were with each other.
Well, let's talk about what you do. Wesley Foundation is, of course, very well known on this campus, been here a long time, has this Wesley Church spire that towers over the two towns. People know that if they don't know any other religious institution in town, probably.
Some people confuse it for a campus chapel or something like that, but
sure.
Because of the long history, we happen to be get property right. It was next to the university. Of course, the university sort of went around us and passed us. At
you're now
as
surrounded.
The years went by, we're surrounded now.
Sure.
Yes, a little island.
Well, it's not so little.
You have, no, not so little.
You have. How many square feet?
Well, I don't even want to hazard a guess, but a sanctuary that seats 500 or 600 people. We're told the longest center aisle in Champaign-Urbana, which makes it a very popular place for people who want to get married.
What are your rules for weddings?
Well, because we're a campus ministry, we do make ourselves available to people who want to talk about having weddings there. We are a Christian church and ministry, so they're Christian worship services.
But people who are not members may use the church for weddings?
They certainly can talk to us about that, and in most cases we're able to work with them on that. Mm. Of course, we're dealing with a lot of students who are not necessarily members of our church at any rate.
They may be members of a church at home.
That's possible. Of course, with the current generation of students, a lot just are not connected to a local church anywhere.
More searching.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Now, before we leave the topic of weddings, since you do have such a beautiful sanctuary and pipe organ and all that, do you spend a lot of your time performing weddings? It used to be said that campus pastors did that a lot because students were of the marrying age, but that marrying age is
it's older
shifted.
Now, isn't
that's
it?
Right.
Yes, we actually have a lot of folks who come back to campus because that's where they met and want to be married here. And of course, we have a lot of students who come out of our ministry. That's where they met, and they want to have that positive association. But then, just a lot of folks from the community. We have a number of weddings at Wesley. It's part of our ministry to the community, I suppose, mm-hmm. A ministry we want to extend. But so during the summertime, just about every single weekend, there's a wedding there. Of course, yeah. There are a number of pastors on our staff in addition to Pastor Rob here next to me. There's also an associate pastor for the church, Reverend Dan King Crady, and a person who works here at WILL, Pastor Dave Dickey, is a licensed pastor, serves with us as well in our Christian education area.
Now, for people who don't understand the Methodist system very well, and of course we have listeners who come from many different backgrounds, what is an elder? Each of you are an elder. Rob,
well,
you want to take that?
Yeah. I have been through it a little bit more recently than Howard, but an elder is it is a process of ordination that United Methodist ministers go through. It is what makes us officially a minister, both in the eyes of the church as well as the state in terms of weddings and things like that.
So you can go to seminary, and that doesn't necessarily mean you're a minister.
There's a lot of people who do that. For whatever reason, they either don't want to go that route or another route opens up of some sort. But yes, to become an elder, you must have completed on the standard track, you must have completed a master's, usually a master's of divinity. And then you have to work through a series of papers and explanations, theological understandings of various concepts, and be approved by United Methodist body, and it's actually the Board of Ordained Ministry. There's a bunch of different hoops that you get to jump through. Most of them have good reason. But then you come out of that, and currently the system works that you are first a probationary minister, and you go through a little bit of time of probation, and after that you are ordained an elder.
So part of this is kind of quality control by the denomination, isn't it?
That's true. The number. There's a large number of United Methodists and churches and pastors, there does need to be some way of helping people to identify whether or not that's their form of service. Mm-hmm. And it's a long process right now in our church to become a fully ordained elder. Now, people can be serving in churches with a license for most of the years that they're in that process. But along the way, we have criminal background checks that are done. We take extensive psychological reviews. We go through a series of writing and examinations with other pastors to clarify that we fit within the theological umbrella that covers the United Methodists. So it's a long process.
How big is the umbrella?
That can be described in a number of ways, but one way to describe it is that there are some 11 million human beings on the planet who are United Methodist, a large number of them, over 8 million of them in the United States, and then the rest in various places overseas. And another way to describe that umbrella is theologically, in which there's just a great deal of diversity. I suppose our founder of the Methodist Church and of many other churches that kind of come out of our stream is John Wesley. And he set a tone for us by saying, in essentials, unity, but in all things, charity or kindness. So we do have a broad theological diversity. Some people find that a terrific part of our denominational heritage. That's something that I love. Others push us on both sides of the debate to either be more specific in clarifying the beliefs that we expect people to adopt, or to push us to broaden the table.
Now, our topic today is campus ministry, and so since both of you are involved in that, when you have a student who comes up and says, "What is it essentially that I have to believe or do to be a Methodist?" How do you answer?
You have to want to belong. You have to want to become a part. And you have to have a passion to follow where you think God is leading you. And in our sense, we actually work with Wesley's quadrilateral, which some argue may not have been from John Wesley, but that in as you reflect on things about an understanding of God, that you look at four different sources. One would be scriptures. So you have to turn to the scriptures and figure out how that would speak to whatever issue you're looking at. The second is tradition. We believe that God has somehow worked through the church, both the church universal and hopefully through the United Methodist Church in the past, and that there's some truth embedded in that. The next one is reason, that God doesn't want us to check our minds at the doors to the sanctuary, but instead God will speak through reason and knowledge. And finally, experience. How do we experience the world? So we kind of approach issues in that direction. Truth be told, as it all comes out in the wash, we follow fairly closely to many of the traditional creeds, whether it's the Nicene Creed, the Apostles' Creed.
That many Christian churches also affirm.
Absolutely. Sure. Having said that, we aren't going to kick someone out if they don't believe in a particular element of it, as long as they are in that process of learning and believing. That's why usually you won't find a litmus test of what a Methodist is. And we cover a pretty broad spectrum, from very conservative to very liberal, very evangelical, to very social justice centered.
And that would be true in any given congregation often as well?
Correct. And also within our campus ministry.
Okay.
I mean, probably our campus ministry, the students who attend are even more diverse than the church there. They're coming from various backgrounds and are drawn to us because of worship experiences, Bible study experiences, some of our services, social justice type things. So they come from different places and we kind of share in some of the activities together. And other pieces are for some students and not for others.
Let me explain for listeners that our guests today are Howard White and Rob Kirby from Wesley Foundation and Church on the U of I campus in Champaign-Urbana. And we're not taking telephone calls today. That's unusual for this program. Usually it's a live program on Sunday afternoons from 5 to 6. But this week, because of my scheduling difficulties, my guests were kind enough to come and pre-record this program that's being broadcast today. But that means we will not be able to have questions from listeners. We regret that, and we'll return to our regular pattern next week. But for now, we'll just have to be satisfied with whatever questions I can come up with or questions that Rob and Howard want to ask each other. Let me continue with our topic for campus ministry. You've each gone to a you went together, I guess, to this conference on campus ministry. When was it and where?
Well, there have been a couple of conferences this summer that relate to campus ministry. The National Campus Ministers Association had a conference in New York City this summer, and we've just returned recently from the United Methodists in Campus Ministry conference. That's was in Baltimore, and it dealt with people who work in a variety of settings. We come from a Wesley Foundation. That means that we have a denominationally supported campus ministry at a specific campus. In some places around the country, they
now you are the first Wesley Foundation.
Well, we were
right?
the very first Wesley Foundation.
Yeah.
Yes,
we and now it's spread around the world.
Well, it's all over the globe now, and Wesley Foundations, the term foundation was chosen so it would not limit what these might become. If you'd called it a church, everybody would have known what that was supposed to look like. But by choosing to call it a foundation, they felt that that gave some freedom for what that might become. Other campus ministries are located in local churches that are nearby a college campus. We share a building with the local church and share many ministries with Wesley United Methodist Church. And as I said, my position is kind of crosses both institutions. Many of the campus ministries don't have any relationship with a particular local church in that way. And then at United Methodist-related colleges, the chaplain of the college is most generally a United Methodist pastor.
And so this conference in Baltimore had representatives from all those types of
groups. All those kinds of ministries and more, representatives from our denominational office that relates to higher education as
well. How many people were there?
We probably had well in excess of 100, which represented a small slice of the total population of pastors who actually serve in higher education.
The other demographic that was there is ecumenical ministries.
Oh, yeah,
there are
sure.
several
yes.
Ecumenical ministries that Methodists are a partial supporter of, and there are a number of persons coming from those type of institutions.
And so there would be many campuses that that might not have a Wesley Foundation or a Baptist or whatever, but there might be a cooperative campus ministry of some sort, an ecumenical one.
No, certainly.
We have an example of that in our annual conference, which encompasses the southern two-thirds of the state of Illinois, down at Southern Illinois University at Edwardsville. On that campus, the United Methodists cooperate with American Baptists and several other denominations in supporting a pastor and a ministry.
So that pastor might come from one of those denominations.
He happens to be American Baptist.
Uh-huh, mm-hmm. But would represent all those denominations
right.
on that campus.
That's right.
And try to be helpful to students who come from those traditions and okay.
Well, you asked a little bit ago about how we came into campus ministry.
Yes.
And one of the things that this conference recognized is that people come into campus ministry in our tradition in many different ways, but often the process that does not allow for selecting people who are, in every case, interested in campus ministry or have any training or background in campus ministry. So one of the things that we've talked about is how to establish credentialing specific for campus ministers. Another piece is just to have a voice within our very large United Methodist denomination speaking for this very important ministry to students who are at a critical time in their lives in terms of their faith development and personal development. And in so many ways, as we choose to redirect money that we have been in the past spending on to provide campus ministry, we're in danger of suggesting that students should form themselves as people in the absence of that kind of spiritual direction and guidance, or at least a resource for question asking.
Now, this is the weekend where many students are going back to colleges, including the University of Illinois. At what stage are they spiritually in their development?
Well, they come here in all kinds of places. There actually was an enormous study done. Rob's reaching for it. An enormous study done at UCLA in the last couple of years. It started in 2003, but that has been looking at where people are as they come in as freshmen at colleges in the United States. And a good selection of them do have a very specific idea about their religious commitment when they arrive. But our experience is that that even among that group, there often is a time of question answering and asking that occurs over this period. And some physicians I've talked to have told me that this is not just not just the fact that they happen to be in the college environment, but that it has to do with the typical college age, and that there's some things happening in brain development and psychological development and other things that just provokes some of those questions at this time in life.
Yeah, this study that Howard mentioned is an interesting study. It's very well done. It had almost 200,000 surveys of college students from well over 200 institutions across our nation.
And it's been done for a number of years, so there's a track record to
Correct.
Look at.
Correct. It's right. Longitudinal, and I think they have at least two more years on this current study, but they have released preliminary results. Here are some statistics to throw out. Again, this is across the nation. 79% of incoming students say they believe in God. 69% say they pray. 81% claim to attend religious services, and that's at least frequently or occasionally. And only 40% follow religious teachings every day in their life. And then within those numbers, you have students all over the board, just as we do across our nation in any demographic.
Well, United Methodists, for instance, represent, I think, 6% of incoming freshmen in colleges across the country.
And that tends to be true most any state?
It differs from state to state. For instance, the state of Illinois has a large concentration of Methodists and may have a larger concentration of students attending schools. That's hard for us to discern because at the University of Illinois, there's no longer a process for discerning or sharing students' religious preference with the campus ministries on campus.
The university used to collect that data, but for some reason isn't anymore. And as a result, Methodists can't find out who the Methodist students are, really.
Well, ideally, we find out through from our United Methodist churches that
sure.
support us, and they
sure.
let us know when students are coming here.
Right.
And although we describe this as being a somewhat rusty pipeline at the moment, mm-hmm. and it's not functioning as well as it perhaps could.
Right. So you're really dependent upon students finding you.
Largely, we do take advantage of things the university provides in terms of quad day. Of course, our location on campus helps us a great deal. A lot of people pass our building, and we're trying to work hard at helping them identify what happens inside that building. We work very closely with the Religious Workers Association and Dean's.
That
is an association of all of the religious groups on campus who choose to participate. It's an ecumenical group that shares
interfaith.
Yeah, interfaith, mm-hmm. shares mutual concerns and education, and relates to the university administration as well.
Hopefully it helps to break down some of those walls between some of the ministries. It's awfully easy to get so focused on your own ministry that you fail to grasp the larger piece that's happening around you. And hopefully we can work better together by joining together at least once a month to share some ideas and thoughts and learn some faces.
I came to this campus ministry as a Presbyterian pastor a long time ago, back in 81. And I had come from a North Carolina State University where there was a cooperative campus ministry among representatives from various groups. It was interfaith. It included a Jewish rabbi. It included Catholics and Protestants. At that time, there wasn't a Muslim representative there. But that group actually did programming together, and I was disappointed when I came to this campus. Maybe it's because the group is so much larger and includes so many more people. But there haven't been many times in my years here since 81 when the Religious Workers Association could really put on a program together. We all do our separate things. We communicate. We let each other know what's going on. But there haven't been too many times when...
There is one coming up this Sunday, though, actually. I guess by the time our listeners have heard this, it has just happened. On Sunday afternoon, they're doing, the religious workers are doing an open house type event there in Illini Union where many, all the religious groups were invited to participate, but many of them put together some bands or some musical pieces and some information to pass out. And then the students have been invited to that in their orientation package.
There have been a couple programs that we've had in the Illini Union where we've each sort of spoken from our own traditions on certain topics. I thought those were helpful. And we do cooperate with orientation for students when given the opportunity to let students know what religious opportunities are available on campus.
But we definitely could be doing a lot more.
We're about halfway through our program today, and let me reintroduce our guest. We're talking with Dr. Howard White, who is the senior pastor and director of the Wesley Foundation, the campus ministry for United Methodists at the University of Illinois, and with Rob Kirby, who is the associate director of Wesley Foundation, and is also a representative to the Methodist Campus Ministry National Organization. We'll talk a bit more about that in the future, a little bit later in the program. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for this program, Keeping the Faith, which comes on WILL AM from 5 to 6 every Sunday afternoon and is usually a call-in program, and we have encouraged listeners to ask questions and make comments about the topic of the day. Today we're talking about campus ministry, but because of my schedule, we've been unable to have this program be live, and so my guests have very kindly come in early, and we've taped this for broadcast at this time. So we're not taking phone calls today, and I apologize for listeners for that inconvenience, but we'll be getting back to that style of program again next week. And next week on Keeping the Faith, our guests will be talking about the Interfaith Alliance, and we'll be having representatives from three different religious groups, Christian, Muslim, and Jewish, and that will be on August 28. September 4, our guest is Bill Plaker, a professor at Wabash College. He's been doing a study funded by the Lilly Foundation on callings, looking at 20 centuries of Christian wisdom on the whole issue of vocation. And we began this program by talking about campus ministry as a bit of a calling or a vocation with our guest today. So that'll be September 4 here on Keeping the Faith. Later in September, we'll be talking with the imam from the Central Illinois Mosque and Islamic Center. A later program will be dealing with Christian Science in October. Those are some of the programs coming up on Keeping the Faith in the weeks ahead. Keeping the Faith is sponsored in part by the University YMCA, where I'm the executive director. I've been at the Y now for 6 years, as on the staff. I'd been a volunteer there before for a number of years. The Campus Y is a campus ministry, but it's actually the oldest, I guess, campus ministry here on this campus. It's been here 132 years at the University of Illinois. One of the Y programs is coming up this week, and it's called Dump and Run, and we have a grand sale of things that students have donated over the summer, last spring, and we're having a sale at the University Stock Pavilion on Pennsylvania Avenue starting this coming Thursday, August 25, 26, 27, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. It starts at 1 o'clock on Thursday and goes till 9. On Friday, it starts at 10 in the morning, goes to 7. On Saturday, it starts at 9 in the morning and will go till 1. We fill the Stock Pavilion with all sorts of things. If you can imagine an item, we have it, and cheap. So come to Dump and Run. It's one of our programs that keeps trash out of, and it keeps items out of the trash and out of the waste stream that are still usable, still useful, and some of them are, believe it or not, brand new. We collect them, we sort them, and we have them for sale, particularly for international students, for entering students, returning students, but also people in the community are invited to come and try to find a bargain. Everything from furniture to books to TVs to sports equipment, you name it, it'll be at the Stock Pavilion this Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. So do stop by. $2 admission on Thursday, $1 Friday, free on Saturday, and we'll be having bag sales on Saturday as well. Well, let's get back to our topic today. We're talking about campus ministry with our guests Rob Kirby and Howard White from the Wesley Foundation at the University of Illinois. I wanted to ask about your programs. What do people find when they do come in that wonderful building you have on the corner of Green and Goodwin?
Depending on how they walk through the door, one thing they experience is a sort of oversized living room. And if they come directly off of Green Street, that was the vision of the those who built the building, that it would, on the outside, look like a building from plucked off of the Oxford campus
in England,
Oxford in England, where our founder, John Wesley, was in fact a campus minister of sorts. He had a group that he worked with there as a pastor. But also that when you walk through the door, you feel like you're entering a welcoming, sort of homey environment rather than walking into an office building or something like that.
There's carpet on the floor, and there's a fireplace, and there's books, and there's
and hopefully
art,
there's some smiling faces to welcome you there,
right,
to give you a little bit of the lay of the land. It is a very large building. It's easy to get lost in, and that's why we try and warm it up with as many students as we can. Any students or actually anyone associated with higher education is welcome to come and camp out there. Maybe not overnight, but we have all kinds of lounges and studies and coffee houses, computer room, all kinds of places that people can connect.
Yeah,
a movie theater.
Quite a movie theater, I might add.
Now, tell us about this coffee house. People who drive by the foundation building will see that sign that says Etc.
ETC, hanging off of right there on the corner of Goodwin and Green. We corner of our building is the Etc. Coffee House. Started a number of years ago as a place for students to come, as a smoke-free environment, as an alcohol-free environment. And we use it for all kinds of programming. Anytime during the week, once the school year starts, it's open for studying, for hanging out. We man it as a coffee house with coffee for a number of events throughout the course of any given week. We have a rainbow coffee house that meets in there that is very intentional about inviting people of all persuasions to be there.
That would be different sexual orientations as well?
Yes, mm-hmm. Absolutely. Literally anyone is welcome in that environment, and they're very intentional about that. Later in the week, we have International Coffee House that I get to help host. That is a time for international students as well as American students to get together to share a little bit about their culture, to drink some coffee together or some tea or some juice, really is designed to be hospitality, ways to help our internationals to integrate into the culture here a little bit better. A lot of them are there to practice their English, and we make sure that we provide an environment that's very conducive to that.
And on this campus, there are 4,600 international students, I think, this fall.
Of all of our ministries, that's one that just gets its own momentum and keeps going. The internationals absolutely love it. They tell their friends about it. We have pretty good word on campus about what a good job we do of welcoming internationals and not necessarily pressuring them or pushing them in any given direction, but just extending grace to them.
Hospitality.
Absolutely. So that's on a Friday afternoon. Later on Friday night and Saturday night, or at least after Labor Day, we'll be starting up what we call our Etcetera Coffee House. And we open up the doors from 9 to midnight on Fridays and Saturdays. We sell coffee pretty cheaply there and some snacks pretty cheaply.
Soft drinks.
Yes, we do have two soda machines that kind of keeps those nice and cold, but a number of snacks of various kinds.
There's something called wassail, which is
a secret recipe. We can't tell you about that.
Especially in the winter, it's wonderful.
But it's non-alcoholic.
Yes, it's a hot, kind of appley, cidery type drink. But again, it is a tightly held secret, known by only a few people within the foundation, even.
Now, before you go on to tell about other programs that you have in campus ministry, another sign that people see as they come by Wesley these days, it looks like it's in a different language.
We have a congregation called Jesus Love United Methodist Church. It's a Korean language congregation, although they do provide English translation now at their services, and they meet in our building on Sunday afternoons. They have offices based in our building, and it's a mostly student congregation, so they have activities also for students throughout the week, including a free lunch on Tuesday lunchtime for students.
And Koreans make up one of the largest populations of international students on this campus now.
That's right. Yeah.
Koreans and Chinese seem to be the most populated at our international events, at least.
Now, you mentioned what people would see when they come in the door at Wesley. What if they come in the door of the big church sanctuary? When's it open, for example? When can people come in to make use of the sanctuary?
Well, our sanctuary is open from about 6 a.m. almost every day. Mm-hmm. There's a group of students who come for prayer at that time, and then we'll be open until 10 p.m. most nights, and for worship, particularly on Sunday mornings, 9:30 for a traditional worship service that would feature our great organ. It's a famous organ that once belonged to the University of Illinois, and built by a famous organ maker called Ernest Skinner, and a choir which features many of the great singers from the University of Illinois Music Department and many others who want to volunteer and sing in that choir under the direction of Jung Hoon Han. And then we have a contemporary service at 11:15 a.m., which is a worship service with accompanied by a band and which incorporates use of video and projection and a lot of other elements. And that service is evolving at the moment. We're taking advantage of much of the learning that's going on and we call emergent worship, but also some things that would be very familiar to those who are accustomed to contemporary worship. They'd recognize a lot of the music that we sing and could enter into that. And then at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, the Jesus Love Church has their worship service in our sanctuary, followed by a lunch.
Now, when you talk about your traditional worship service that makes use of the pipe organ and choir and all of that, does that attract more students than the later contemporary service, or are they balanced, or do most of the students go to the contemporary one?
Well, they've been very well balanced, actually, in the total number. If we would estimate that during the height of the school term, there may be 100 students or so worshiping with us on Sunday morning, they'd be split fairly evenly between the two services.
So some students appreciate the traditional forms of worship.
Well, for many, that's what church is, and they are as uncomfortable in the contemporary service as some of the older folks who would say that that's an uncomfortable place, and we offer an outstanding traditional service that does meet the needs of those students.
Now, is there interpretation of scripture and a sermon or a type of sermon in both services, or is there not in the contemporary?
There is. There's this, I guess we would call a sermon or a message in both services. Typically, it's a similar message to that occurs in both services, that the services would share the same general theme in scripture for both traditional and contemporary. We tend to have a little more relaxed style in presenting it. It can be a little bit more of a conversational or dialogue than service. It's a traditional service. In our traditional service, we wear robes and academic hoods and all the rest of the regalia, and contemporary service is a much more casual feel, both for the leadership as well as for those who attend.
What kind of instruments are in the band?
At the moment, or during the last year, we've had electric guitar, bass guitar, drums, piano, sometimes electric keyboard, flutist, a trumpet player, and others as they've been available and have been integrated and used. We'll welcome people with some of those musical talents and like to give them a place to be involved. We really have a vision in our ministry for being a place where students and young adults can be equipped to have leadership experience. And we anticipate that over the years to come, as in the years past, we'll continue to send out leaders for the United Methodist Church and other churches year by year.
As we talk about that later contemporary service, it might be helpful to know that we are in the process of retooling that. We have lost our worship leader who served us very well last year, but we are in the process of hiring someone else into that position and are looking at trying to find out how to make sure we're connecting with some of the emerging generation with that. In the past, it's been a very seeker-sensitive model. And we've found that that's been scaring off some of our students. And we're trying to find a way to kind of strike a balance there.
So what do you see the difference between the two types of people you just mentioned, seekers and emergent?
Okay. A lot of what I will say is coming from Dan Kimball, who is a pastor out at Vintage Faith Church. He's one of the major voices in what is called the Emerging Church. They've been doing some generational studies as well as in terms of mindset of our culture, and they've been looking at the postmodern shift that has been happening. And they've identified modern Christian worship as, I don't know if you're familiar with Willow Creek, which is probably one of the largest ones in the nation, which would have guitars and a number of voices up there and a very, very polished feel. This modern church is often what people think of when they hear the word contemporary now. It would be excellence, tightly run worship services. It would have very cognitive learning where you're thinking through and processing, oftentimes through a one-way preaching. It might be different voices doing it, but it is the voice from the stage.
It might be a drama or something like that, but...
correct, or
right.
Even videos.
Sure.
In many of the contemporary churches, they've removed some things that might be unfamiliar to seekers, such as ancient symbols that may be on the walls. Stained glass was kind of steered away from because, that's old. Only old churches have that. Sometimes even crosses were taken out of the sanctuary so as not to offend people who may come with some baggage. And they really value going to church. I mean, going and participating in that Sunday worship is at the heart of what it means for them to be Christian. And then that's balanced against the emerging church. instead of this excellence and tightly run worship service, they want to avoid anything that even sounds or feels like performance. They want to experience learning not just through cognitive forms, but through teaching and interactions within the worship, where there are times for the congregation to respond to what's being said or perhaps add to or even disagree. The emerging church or emerging values for this culture is going to start reconnecting with some of the historical elements. A lot of that, those symbols that were pulled out of the sanctuary are being brought back in. Some of the liturgy that was steered away from in contemporary worship is finding its way back in. And the focus is less on going to this church service and more about how can we be the church in our daily lives. And I know I've kind of pulled those apart artificially in some sense, but it kind of gives you a sense for two different directions. And we're trying to figure out how to bridge some of that and make sure that we are connected with both
groups. And you're finding contemporary young people, young adults, sort of with two different experiences, it sounds like.
Three. The other one is none.
Sure, of course. Yeah, which may be the biggest. In terms of numbers.
Yes.
We're talking with Rob Kirby, who has just been speaking, who's the Associate Director of the Wesley Foundation here at the University of Illinois, and with Dr. Howard White, who's the Senior Pastor and Director of the Foundation, about campus ministry and talking about some of their experiences with students of today and the kind of ministries that appeal to those students and meet their needs. In addition, campus ministry includes faculty and staff and people who are professional engineers and scientists and write books that influence people all around the world. How does Wesley Foundation deal with those folks in addition to all the students you have to try to respond to?
This is where our combination of church and a foundation sort of really comes to be a blessing in our setting, because a large percentage of the members of the Wesley United Methodist Church are associated with this university as staff, as faculty, as administrators. They might be people working teaching courses or working in development or doing any number of different things, or working in businesses in the community that either spun off of the university or related to the university, and many of them are alumnus of the University of Illinois as well. And I should say, in the context of all this, we also serve a number of students who come from Parkland College and some of the folks who are on staff there.
15,000 students there.
Mm, absolutely.
Sure. Now, you've talked about some of the programs, some of the things that you do. How do you pay for it? How do you pay the bills for just the heating that huge building and for having the staff you have? Where does the money come from for campus ministry these days at Wesley and other places?
Well, this is the daily challenge of all nonprofits, but certainly of campus ministry is funding. You mentioned our large facility. Within that facility, we do have some tenants who use portions of the building. We're very pleased to have those relationships with the Urbana School District to provide a program for severely disabled persons in our facility called the ASSIST program. Proud of the Playtime Preschool and a long association with them, and very pleased to be in to have as a tenant Home High, junior high school for girls, and they're very good tenants, and we're just glad to be in association with them. But that only helps to pay a part of the bill. We have a parking lot, which is in a very desirable space on campus, and a long waiting list of persons who want to rent a parking space there. But our majority of our funding comes from a couple of sources. One of them is the United Methodist denomination through the Illinois Great Rivers Conference, the southern two-thirds of the state of Illinois, those United Methodist churches. We have an endowment that has been the result of the giving of faithful friends over the years, and that becomes a part of our funding formula. And then we have a significant amount of support that we receive from alumni every year. We do a lot of work at nurturing those relationships, both in supporting them after they leave the university, helping them to keep some of those friendships alive, but also because Wesley's the place where they had such an important life experience, they want to make sure that it's there for other generations. And so they are a growing source of support. The United Methodist Conference, our Illinois Great Rivers Conference, has given us a great vote of confidence this past summer. A proposal was brought forward to reduce our funding by over 55%. The conference rejected that proposal, and so we were looking at having no clue about how we were going to be paying the heating bills this year, and but find ourselves feeling very encouraged. But across the country, one of the things we discovered at the conference we recently attended with the United Methodist in Campus Ministry from around the country is that the funding support from the denomination is decreasing almost everywhere, and the burden is shifting to local churches, to local Wesley foundations to raise their own support, or to fold and or fold themselves into other denominational programs. This is not a only United Methodist phenomenon. This is happening in with the Presbyterian Church USA, with the Episcopal Campus Ministries, with others, that they're all facing a tightening budgets, exploding health care costs for pastors and others, and it's just putting pressure on the dollars that are sent to what we feel is essential ministry and campus.
How do you teach contemporary students to be future givers, or perhaps even present givers? After all, students spend a lot of money on all kinds of things, food and drink and entertainment. And
one is by example. Uh-huh. We've got to figure out how they can witness us supporting, not just financially, but in many different ways, not only the foundation, but the church, as well as other causes. If they are not aware that others are doing it, they'll never learn. Having said that, some of our best givers are those who have just gotten out of college, who suddenly have a source of income and know how much they value what they experienced in campus ministry. And some of our best givers are some of our most recent grads.
We actually, I think church members around this community would probably be surprised to discover the level of giving that students, undergraduates and graduate students are doing. There certainly are many examples of widow's mite stories, a story of a person giving more than maybe they can afford to give. We have an international student who comes to our church and gives $3 every week. Yeah. Well, I don't know what portion of his income that makes up, but one gets the impression in knowing him that it might be a significant sacrifice that he's making in that. We also have persons who are graduate students who are among the largest givers in our congregation. They just have learned that somewhere along the way, and they may practice the tithe, the practice of giving a tenth of their income, even if that income is related to their graduate program or through spouse's employment, and they have a lot to teach us.
You've talked about what students get out of being involved in campus ministry. What are some of those benefits?
Well, one of the things that was discovered in this comprehensive study done by UCLA was that, among other things, those who have this sort of spiritual or religious connection while they're entering college tend to be healthier. They tend to eat healthier for whatever reason, although we feed them a lot of food that's not particularly healthy. They rate themselves as having above average self physical health. They tend not to be as prone to the excesses of alcohol and drug consumption that other students are involved in. They have more positive, in some cases, peer relationships, friendships that support them in healthier lifestyles. But then in terms of just spiritual development, it's a safe place to ask important questions. We have adults and then pastors there who are there to help at times of need. Students have a lot of crises that they experience, both personal crises and those related to losses in their family, or students at the University of Illinois experiencing a low grade for the first time in their lives. the university actually recognizes the role of those of us in campus ministry as persons who provide counseling.
We often get referrals from
from
the university if it involves a spiritual or religious issue.
Yes.
Rob, can you give us an example in our closing minute and a half or so of a student you've worked with since you've been on this campus who benefited from involvement in campus ministry?
Well, there have been so many. It works both ways. We definitely benefit from them. We have a young man named Dylan who was very active. He had some very challenging disabilities, and he taught us how to be welcoming of persons who are confined to wheelchairs. In term, we became a launching platform for him as he went off to his graduate studies. His spiritual depth blows me away. It amazes me on how articulate he can be about his faith and how willing he is to share it with others. And I definitely know that that has influenced him. The other one that immediately springs to mind is a young lady by the name of Laura, who just graduated this past year. She actually was involved in our peer ministry program for 4 years. She was very active in leading other students in their spiritual walk here. And she has become a US2 missionary. She's most recently moved to New Mexico, is going to be working at a homeless shelter there for the next 2 years, doing ministry with people transitioning back into housing.
Those examples remind me of students at the Y who have gone on to teach for America and into some of the most difficult teaching positions around the country, and of course into the Peace Corps and AmeriCorps and working with homeless. And I think we're really fortunate in campus ministry to often get the best of the best, the best students, the brightest students, the ones who are most committed, who are motivated by good ethics and values and really caring about other people. And as you say, we learn a lot from them.
Mm-hmm. Well, our church learned from Dylan. We have made dramatic steps to increase our handicap accessibility just because of that relationship.
Well, keeping the faith today, we've been fortunate to talk with Dr. Howard White, who was just speaking, who is the senior pastor and director of the Wesley Foundation here at the University of Illinois at Wesley United Methodist Church, and with the associate director, Rob Kirby, who's also a campus ministry representative to the United Methodists nationally. We've been talking about campus ministry. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the director of the University YMCA, also interfaith campus ministry here at the University of Illinois. On Keeping the Faith, next week we'll be talking about the Interfaith Alliance with Rika Shorish and Colleen Vojak and Walter Feinberg representing Muslims, Christians, and Jews in an interfaith alliance. The following week, we'll be talking with Professor Bill Plaker from Wabash College about Christian vocation. Thank you for listening to Keeping the Faith. This is Steve Shoemaker.
You've been listening to Keeping the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
Can white guys be hip? Many have tried, but only a few have achieved true hip cat status. Bob Dylan, Lenny Bruce, maybe Jack Kerouac. Compare them to Miles Davis, and you have to wonder if they're really just hipster wannabes. I'm Jim Fleming. Next time, on To the Best of Our Knowledge, the history of hip and how it's so often tied to race. It's To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Tonight at 7 here on WILL Urbana. There's still time to win one of two grand prizes in the WILL sweepstakes, the $2,000 grand prize shopping spree plus design services from Carter's Furniture, or the $2,000 garden grand prize from Country Arbors. Or you could bring home a shaker-style dining table from Schweitzer & Schweitzer, a genome embroidery machine from So Sassy, or artwork from Billy Morrow and C.D. Mariah Jackson. But you can't win if you don't enter, and entries must be postmarked by September 6th. To request an entry form, call 217-333-1070. Tonight in Champaign-Urbana, mostly clear with a low in the upper 50s and northwest winds around 10 miles per hour during the evening, then becoming light. Tomorrow, partly cloudy with a high in the upper 70s and north winds around 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy in the evening, then clearing with a low in the lower 50s and northeast winds around 10 miles per hour in the evening, becoming light. It's 6 p.m. This American Life is next.